The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome back. It's good to be here with you today, but we got a lot to get into, a lot of news, a lot of video now coming out. The 911 call from Paul Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi, that video has come out. Pretty graphic stuff. We're also going to talk about what's happening down in Memphis and so much more. Boy, we live in such a violent time, don't we? I look at these attacks on city streets in major cities around our country, and you're thinking, how do we get to this point? You know what it is, in my opinion? It's a spiritual thing. It is Satan being very effective in his war on families. You know, we talked about this meteorologist who got beaten up trying to come to the defense of a man whose hair was set on fire in a subway. And these were 15-year-old kids out in the middle of the night on a subway, right? That's what they were doing. Where were their parents? Where were their parents? There's a breakdown in the family. I think a lot of this is a byproduct. You also have a lot of mental illness. I just was watching the video of Paul Pelosi trying to fight the attacker off, get the hammer out of his head, and you just see this guy wail at him. And we just need a lot of prayer. We need a lot of prayer in this country. And we'll do that. Coming up in about, 57 minutes, we will pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. I'm going to give you an early heads up. If you want to get in, lines fill up so quickly. But, man, the results of that prayer are off the charts. And I want to thank everyone who's been sending in their answered prayers to me. It just shows how effective that prayer is and how God is moved by it and the fruit that we are seeing of it. So feel free to get in and do me a favor. I think it's a wonderful thing to do is just to share the news. Tell others about the chaplet. Tell one other person today who's really going through a tough time. Why don't you tune in and just listen? Or why don't you call in and send us your intention or post it on Twitter and we'll get it on air for you. So lots of ways to connect. I don't know if you've been following any of this Pfizer stuff, and next week I'm going to dive a little bit more deeply into it, but Project Veritas dropped a video this of a Pfizer executive talking about experiments of directed evolution of the COVID virus. And there was a follow-up video to this. I don't know what audio, Maggie, you pulled. I don't know where you have the video at the table or if it's the follow-up video. The follow-up video of the project's founder, James O'Keefe, he found Jordan, I think the guy's name was Tristan Walker, who was who is Pfizer's director of research and development for strategic operations, and basically an MNRA as well. So he's the one working on all that. But he was at the coffee shop, started asking him about the interview. And let's just say Walker didn't take it too well, ended up assaulting O'Keefe. A police officer responded to the melee and didn't arrest anyone. But it's safe to say I think Walker will probably be looking for a new job in the not-too-distant future. Here's just part of this undercover video that now is making its way all around social media. And again, I love this undercover stuff because this is often when truth is brought to life. Listen to this.
Pfizer ultimately is thinking about mutating COVID?
Well, that is not what we say to the public. No, don't tell anyone this. We're exploring, you know how the virus keeps mutating?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things we're exploring is, why don't we just mutate it ourselves so we can develop new vaccines, right? So we have to do that. If we're going to do that, though, there's a risk of, as you could imagine, no one wants to be having a pharma company mutating.
Yeah, nobody wants to have a pharma company mutating a virus, right? He actually uses some profanity, so we just cut that out. So you didn't hear that part in there. But that's a terrifying soundbite. That's crazy. Yeah, but why? Well, about money, the bottom line. If we can mutate this virus, imagine if it got out. And we saw what happened, what came out of Wuhan, right? Totally unexpected. Well, what if something happened with gain of function or the virus was somehow mutated? And it created an even worse pandemic, took even more lives, all in the presupposition that, you know what, we're going to have the antidote for this. So, yeah, let it get out a little bit. You know, as it begins to spread, we've got the solution. Billions of dollars will flow into our coffers because we've got an antidote. I don't know how true all that is, but clearly that is the an undercover video of somebody who worked there saying that's what they were talking about. That's what they were thinking about. We wouldn't say this to the public. Now, Pfizer seems to be trying to make mRNA vaccines into a cash cow, right? Or at least that's what Walker claims. However, Bill Gates, and I want to play some audio from Bill Gates as well for you. he may be barking up the wrong tree. He did an interview with Lowy Institute, and Gates said this. And I'm going to play some of the audio for you coming up. Maggie, I don't know which clip you have. Do you have the one where he wants to talk about fixing the problem of mRNA vaccines? Yeah, go open your mic and share that.
He says that the vaccines don't block transmission of the virus, and they've never done that.
Big news, huh? So listen, here's Bill Gates.
We think we can also have, very early in an epidemic, a thing you can inhale that will mean that you can't be infected, a blocker, an inhaled blocker. We also need to fix the three problems with vaccines. The current vaccines are not infection blocking. They're not broad, so when new variants come up, you lose protection. And they have very short duration, particularly in the people who matter, which are old people. And every one of those things is fixable. In fact, doing that work is going to help vaccinology very, very broadly. You know, we've, for example, the Gates Foundation, we have a malaria vaccine, but it only lasts for 6 months. And understanding, okay, how do we get the long-lived memory B cells in that case? It's very similar to figuring out how we make these COVID vaccines last longer. So this, fortunately, the rich world desire and the developing country desire is actually aligned in terms of what that R&D agenda should look like.
Yeah, I heard one expert the other day say that they want to have annual COVID vaccines. I don't know how, but how you feel about it. I don't know if you're glad you had the vax or you're saying, wow, I'm glad I didn't, right? I mean, I don't know what your position on that is, but listen to what Gates said there. He says, we need to fix three problems of mRNA vaccines. One, the current vaccines are not infection blocking. I mean, that's key, right? They're not infection blocking. Two, they're not broad. So when these new variants come up, you lose protection. So you got the, you know, you got the vaccine for Omicron or Delta or whichever booster or vaccine you got. Okay, might have been effective initially, but it's powerless. How many people do you know have been vaccinated and boosted, still came down with different variants of COVID? So one, they're not infection blocking. Two, when new variants come up, you lose protection. Three, he says, you get the shot, but it has a short duration, particularly for people who matter, the elderly. That's the most vulnerable of the demographics. On Monday, I don't want to go down this path right now on COVID, but I'm just throwing this on your radar. I'll dive into it with Dr. Harry Risch on Monday. Saw another story, and I want to validate this before we dive too deeply into it. A question's being raised. Do COVID vaccines poke holes in the blood-brain barrier and cause neurodegenerative disorders? What are they? Well, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. Are we seeing a rise in that? Now, we see what's happening in the young with myocarditis, right? So we will take a look at that and a whole lot more on Monday, but just wanted to throw out there to you the undercover video. You might see a little bit more of that floating around. Also wanted to get you plugged into what Bill Gates is saying, because Gates has been pushing for vaccines as the way to stop COVID. And he's saying, you know what? Vaccines, the COVID vax really didn't stop COVID. They don't cover mutations. They don't last very long. They don't even help old people. So I know a lot of people are saying, well, why am I getting them? Why am I getting them? And I'm not poo-pooing them. Believe me, I am not. I want to look objectively at the truth here. For some, you know, it may have given a layer of protection. Maybe the timing was right. Maybe it did save their lives. There's a lot of tangential stuff we've talked about that has caused people a lot of concern. So I just think we need the truth. You know, how many more of these are going to come out? How many more boosters? How many more variations? Are you going to get one every single year, like a flu shot? I mean, what's that like? I mean, what if there's some other variant? And then when you talk about Pfizer, you know, contemplating, and again, this is undercover video. I don't know how credible this guy is at all. Came out from Project Veritas, claiming that they would like to preemptively create vaccines and maybe they would mutate the variant, you know, so they know what they've got to deal with. It's like, woo. You're playing with some fire right there. Father Philip Pachansky is going to be stopping by. I want to address what the Holy Father had to say, too. We'll get to him in a few minutes. But I want to fill you in on another story we've been following for a long time, the Jack Phillips saga. That name sounds familiar to you, doesn't it? Jack Phillips? You know him. He's the owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop in Colorado. And for the last 10 years, he has been a target, right? He has a target painted on his back. He went to the Supreme Court in 2018. He won that case after a same-sex couple wanted him to decorate a cake to, quote, celebrate their marriage. And the ruling was tailored narrowly, and it's really not helping him in a case that started the day after he won. Day after he won, an activist lawyer walked into a shop and says, okay, so you won this case. I want a cake. I want a cake to celebrate my transition from male to female. And Jack's like, I'm sorry. You know, I can't do that. I'll make you any other cake you want, but I'm just not going to do that. And he says, okay. And he sued him, right? Sued him on the state level. Yesterday, the Colorado Appeals Court actually ruled against Jack Phillips, telling him he had to make the cake for this confused man. This is going to be appealed, of course. It's going to go to the state Supreme Court. And let's hope they do the right thing. But we'll see. Again, could have went anywhere to have that cake made. You know where Jack stands. I mean, we all talk about tolerance, right? There's a spirit of intolerance with those who want you to accept their way and to celebrate their behavior. And it's not just, and it's not right. It's just not. They deliberately went in there because they wanted to cause this guy more grievance and more angst. I'll fill you in on some more news. Before we do that, though, let's talk about the Pope. He made a lot of headlines yesterday, right? Have you caught any of what went down? You know, the Holy Father likes to speak extemporaneously. He sometimes speaks off the cuff, and sometimes, you know, he starts a lot of conversation, whether it's about, you know, condoms in Africa, and whether it's contraception or same-sex marriage or whatever it may be. The Holy Father gave a very wide-ranging interview earlier this week to the AP, to the Associated Press, and he was talking about this, you know, German synodal process, and, you know, he was honest. He expressed his unhappiness on how that's going. He talked about gun control. He says we're a world obsessed with weapons. He talked about his own health. He talked about his critics. He even talked about the future of the papacy. As I said, it was pretty, you know, broad, pretty wide-ranging. But while that was all mentioned, you know, in this interview, that wasn't the headline that the AP gave to the story and said, this was the really important thing, according to them. I just quote their one sentence. They said, the AP said, quote, interview, Pope says homosexuality, not a crime, end of quote. Homosexuality, not a crime. Pope says homosexuality, not a crime, end of, quote. The really important thing, the most important thing, is really what the Vicar of Christ on Earth thinks about homosexuality. And that issue has become the touchstone for all secularism. And if the eyes of the secular world, if you don't get this issue right, then you know, you're absolutely horrible. So the Pope, what he said was very interesting. He made a distinction, and we're going to talk about this. And if you want to join us, you want to talk a little bit about maybe your loved one who has same-sex attraction, how you view the church, what the church teaches, we can unpack that for you right now. You can get in at 888-914-9149. He made a distinction between criminality and sin. And we all know that there are sins that aren't crimes, right? Gossiping is a sin. It's not a crime. There are also crimes that aren't sins, like, you know, the crime in Britain of standing silently in front of an abortion clinic, right? As one lady was doing. So that distinction is right to be made. We can show you different cases where, you know, these situations play out differently. But when the Pope said, what he said in relationship to homosexuality is that it shouldn't be considered a crime, he was referring to other countries, you know, where people are flogged, they're imprisoned, they're even killed in some cases. He also characterized bishops who support their countries, their laws against, you know, homosexual behavior. But what he did make clear, though, was that homosexuality behavior is a sin. He didn't sugarcoat it. He did articulate that. Of course, that's nothing new. It's very clear. The church has been teaching that for centuries. That act, that behavior, goes against the natural order, and it's sinful. So having homosexual tendencies, you know, the church says, you know, we all have to live chaste in our state and life. You can have same-sex attraction, right? That's not sinful. You can have that. Just can't act on it any more than I can have, you know, heterosexual desires. And I just can't act on that freely. You know, I have to be true to my state and life. If I'm single, I need to be chaste. If I'm married, I need to be chaste within that state. You know, there's a lot of moral weakness out there and a lot of people who want to be able to, you know, to have that green light in. Maggie, we've got some audio here too, right? Should we play this before we go to Father or get Father on the air? What do you think? All right, let's Maggie grab that clip. I think this ran before Trending with Timmery, right? Josh Raymond, I think, ran this a little bit earlier. It might be a good springboard to get into this whole conversation on same-sex attraction and what the church teaches, what the Holy Father teaches, and the importance of drawing distinctions. So here it is.
So last night, I was listening to Relevant Radio. I caught the last 20 minutes or so of the show Trending. If you haven't listened to Trending, it airs each night at 6 Central on Relevant Radio. And the regular host, her name is Timmery. She's actually out on maternity leave right now. She had a little girl just about a month ago. And the guest host that was in, her name is Brooke Taylor. So Brooke, she interviewed a man named Paul Darrow. Paul Darrow is a former male model. He had been living in an openly gay lifestyle for years and years. He was an atheist, but he had a conversion, and now he works with other people who struggle with same-sex attraction. And in the last 10 minutes of that interview, a listener, a woman named Mary, she called in and she asked for advice. Her call is exactly the focus of our conversation today on The Inner Life. Here, give a listen to that call from Mary.
I'm struggling with a 19-year-old who had same-sex attraction. He's doing drugs, alcohol, just lying, just doing, you know, doing everything he shouldn't be doing. And we're Catholic, practicing Catholic. He went to Catholic school. And every day I tell him that God loves him, that Jesus loves him, to do the right thing. And I just don't feel like I'm getting through. I pray all the time. I just don't know what to do.
You can just hear that mother's heart there, can't you? Now, there had not been any coordination behind the scenes between Trending, having the same theme of a conversation last night, and here on The Inner Life, us discussing this today. But for some reason, the Holy Spirit was at work to have both of our shows discuss the same issue, that issue of same-sex attraction, and then how you can love and support someone in your family while still being true to the teachings of the Catholic Church. So maybe you heard that interview last night and you are listening again right now. There must be something that the Holy Spirit wants you to hear if you have a loved one who is living in that gay lifestyle, or maybe you have a son or a daughter who has told you that they identify as a different gender than their biological sex, and you find yourself, you're caught in this difficult place. You don't want to alienate or drive away that person that you love.
So that's part of that conversation. And of course, it continues. You can listen to The Inner Life. Josh had a great show today by going to the podcast. You can always listen to Timmery's show last night. And today, by providence, again, none of us coordinated our schedules. I had been wanting to talk a little bit about what the Father, Holy Father had to say, just put perspective in, but we're going to open the phones. It'll be completely open to you. Let's just talk about the issue in general. And I want to welcome to the conversation Father Philip Bachansky. He is the Executive Director of Courage and Encourage, which supports those dealing with same-sex attraction and their families. And you can learn more online. This is an excellent organization. It's CourageRC.org. CourageRC.org. And Father, thank you for your time. Welcome back.
Thanks, Drew. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
So, Father, let's pick up first with you heard that audio there, but and we can get into more of that. I'd like to address some of those issues, and many people may want to call and talk to you as well. But first, with the Holy Father, you know, I think understanding what the church teaches is so important. You know, the Holy Father came out, and I thought drew a very clear distinction. I don't know why it got so much air. Distinction between criminality and sin. I'd love your thoughts on what the Holy Father had to say.
Well, I'm grateful for what he says. I agree with him, you know, on that point, you know, that the Church has taught consistently that experiencing same-sex attractions is not a sin in itself, that no one should be condemned or marginalized or treated poorly because they have that experience. And so we distinguish the experience of attraction from actions which are sinful, and sexual relations between people of the same sex the church considers sinful for the same reason that she considers contraception or adultery or fornication or masturbation sinful, because some of the essential elements of sexual intimacy in God's plan are missing, namely complementarity and procreativity. But it's not the case that in any society everything that's sinful is criminal, or that everything that's legal is therefore good, that the church judges according to the moral law, and it's up to the civil society to make good judgments about society and the common good in the civil law. No, I would agree with what the Holy Father said about his concern for a number of countries where simply being known to be same-sex attracted is a crime in itself, irrespective of any actions that a person may or may not take. It's not consistent with the Catholic Church's understanding of attractions and actions.
Is there a misunderstanding in the culture at large, or is it amongst, I don't know, specific individuals, groups, churches, I don't know, where they look at somebody who may have same-sex attraction, who's gay, and they think they're sinful? Maybe objectively they look at that way without the facts, and they view that person, but some may believe that having this tendency is sinful. That's not the case. I think that should be clearly articulated. Hey, do you see that in people you deal with?
I think in terms of how people react, it's easy to go to one extreme or the other, either to say, love is love and this is how God made you and anything you want to do is fine, or to say, on the other hand, there's something inherently evil about you because you're experiencing this, and the only way to be kind of worthy of membership in the church or the eternal life in heaven is to to completely reorient yourself and become straight, as if that's a thing that's possible or easy to do. One of the things that I thought was very interesting in the Holy Father's interview, and I had a chance to read the whole transcript of it, he points out in a couple places how in certain cultures that are passing laws like this or considering laws like this, they don't come right out and say that it's about homosexuality, that they talk about regulating behavior on the principle that it's inimical to public health or public morality or the sensibilities of a certain culture. And, so I think that it's easy for people to kind of get on board with that and not necessarily read the whole bill and recognize that it's basically singling people out for penalties or even mistreatment, or, as the Holy Father pointed out, in some cases, capital punishment because of this experience that they're going through.
Yeah. If you want to join the conversation, I want to open the phones so you can get in at 888-914-9149. We'll take your calls in just a minute or two here. You said something, Father, that we hear a lot, and I'd love you to expand on it. It's a mantra that's used by the mainstream culture. I've seen it on signs, where love is love. And why can't two people who love each other, regardless of their sex, be in that relationship?
Yeah, and I mean, it's fundamental to the human person that we're made to be in loving relationships, so much so that the church says that a person cannot fully find himself or herself, can't realize their identity, except by making a sincere gift of themselves. But there's more than one kind of love, right? And we, each of us, are called to love lots of people in lots of different ways. We are called to love everyone with charity. We love some people with affection, probably a smaller number with friendship. But in terms of sexually intimate love, it's either one or none, right? In your case, you have a very particular kind of love for your spouse. In my case, I have a very particular gift of self that I make to the church, which means that I make a promise not to marry a woman and not to marry a wife. But that, I think we do a disservice to people when we suggest that, well, if you don't have a sexual partner, if you're not married, that you have no love in your life. That's a very narrow, very minimalistic way of looking at love. I mean, I've been celibate, you know, for, well, my whole life, but officially celibate for 30-some years since I entered the seminary, and I have lots of love in my life, family and friends and, well, most of my parishioners, I guess, but, you know, it's just that there's more to love than just sexual intimacy, and there's more to even to vocation than the married state, we're not trying to condemn people to a life without love, but to put each type of love in its proper perspective.
Did you think the Holy Father should do more? Should the church be more clear on this teaching? Do we hear enough of it from the pulpit? I mean, the Holy Father makes these statements. The AP grabs a portion of it. It's not always the full statement. There's a lot of confusion that ensues. The church is sometimes looked at hateful or, you know, lacking understanding. How do we address this so that the culture better understands the position that the church comes from, which is one of love and virtue?
Well, I think we have to start with talking more about God's plan for the human person, for the human body, for relationships, what we might call Christian anthropology. What does it mean to be a human being, a man or a woman, a person who's called to be in relationship? And when we do that, like full-throatedly, enthusiastically talking about the beauty of complementarity, the goodness of a permanent faithful relationship of marriage, the real gift of children in marriage, then we can talk about things like same-sex relations or adultery or fornication or contraception as departing from something that's so good and so important, you know, that the reason the church has to say no to this is because she wants us all to be able to say yes to God's plan. And, you know, it's no shock that these days we would be talking about issues of homosexuality, of gender identity discordance, because the culture and, frankly, the evil one, you know, have been laying the groundwork for a century. First the acceptance of contraception, and then abortion as contraception, and then you know, marriage not needing to be permanent, marriage not needing to be fruitful. You know, we get to where we are today through a series of steps of picking apart all the essential elements of God's plan for sexuality, and we need to proclaim that loud and clear.
Well said. When we come back, we'll go to the phones. We'll grab your calls if you want to join us. It's 888-914-9149. Love to hear from you. And Jane in Pittsburgh, you're first up. We're speaking today with Father Philip Pachansky, taking a look at what the Holy Father had to say about homosexuality, and we'll explore same-sex attraction and a proper understanding of it. Stay with me. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Get connected. Drew Mariani on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be back here with you today. Thanks for calling in. I'm going to jump into the phones in a quick second and grab your call. I just saw a news story earlier this morning about a new production of Jesus Christ Superstar. Have you ever saw it? I know a lot of people say, oh, I don't like it. I love the music. I think the music to Jesus Christ Superstar was great, right? It's being done in Britain, and the lead actor there is a guy claiming to be non-binary, claiming Jesus, and a woman who's playing Judas Iscariot. So we live in a very crazy time. Friends of mine just went. My wife and I were supposed to have dinner with them last week, and I got sick. I guess it was last Saturday or the Saturday before, whenever that was. So Kathy and I, we couldn't meet them, and we said, sorry, we're sick in bed that whole time. So they said, okay, well, we're down in the city. We're going to get tickets. We're going to go see My Fair Lady. I think they were in Milwaukee is where this was playing. And in the middle of My Fair Lady, a classic Broadway show, was a drag scene. And I'm thinking, imagine you bring your kids to see something like that. So we live in a world where there's such confusion. There's such craziness, right? And whether it's Jesus Christ Superstar, My Fair Lady, wherever it might be, you know, drag queen story hours, whatever it might be for kids. So the Holy Father was asked about this. He came out. And look, there are places in the world where those who have same-sex attraction are treated terribly, right? They're in prison, they're flogged, horrible things are done to them. And he was asked about it, and he came out and he says, look, it's not a crime, and people went crazy. But he did draw a distinction. And my guest today is Father Philip Pachansky. He hails from a great organization. I want you to check out this website. It's called Courage, C-O-U-R-A-G-E-R-C. org, and it'll be a tremendous, tremendous resource for you. Okay, so check it out online. And let's pick up on that point. Let's talk about, and I want to get back to the phones very quickly, but just the criminality of this is something that I think I would love you to address once again. Just bring some clarity to it. What the Holy Father said.
Yeah, the Holy Father insisted that, you know, because the Church makes a distinction between between actions which are sinful, but orientation or attractions which are not a sin in themselves, that to legislate as some countries are doing, to impose prison terms, worse punishments, even capital punishment on somebody, is really not something that the Church can support. And he mentioned in his interview that sometimes, you know, bishops, because of their prominence in the culture, tend to go along with these laws when it seems that, like, what the secular culture wants. And, you know, I've had a chance to write to the bishops of an African country. I haven't had a response back from them, so I maybe just leave it vague. But the reason that I wrote about the law that's going through Parliament in their country is because one of our potential Courage members actually reached out to me. And if I can read a little bit of what she said.
Sure,
she said, you know, she said, unfortunately, many people within our church have supported this bill, and it's caused many of us to stop attending church because we do not feel loved and are afraid. For example, she says, earlier last year, I tried to connect my former parish priest with your office to set up a Courage chapter, but all the same-sex attracted people I spoke with who were initially interested in meeting to get help canceled the meeting later. Some said they could no longer trust a priest due to the church advocating for the bill, and now many believe the church hates them. So I think it's really important for the church to maintain those distinctions on both sides of the question, to draw a line between making something criminal and speaking about whether it's moral or immoral, if only because we want people to be able to come for the help that the church that really wants to provide.
Yeah, and as I was saying a little bit earlier, I think that's really so important that everybody has somebody that they know or is related to them or somehow in their life that has same-sex attraction. They should feel loved. And the church of all places should be a place whose arms are open and receptive. And that misconception that, you know, they can't go to church, I think is such a sad reality. And I know the work you do with Courage and Encourage, really helping families and individuals. I want to talk about that. But before we do, let's go to Jane in Pittsburgh, who's been holding the longest, and grab a few other calls. Jane, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Hi. Good afternoon, Drew.
Hey.
I listen to your show, and I've listened to many talks concerning this subject. My son is gay, and it was a painful experience. We didn't tell my husband for a long time, and I don't know why, because he knew. And he's fine. I mean, you know, he's my son, and I love him. So that's it.
Sure, of course.
But how do I support him if he talks to me about things or people he meets? He has not acted on any of this for so long because he had been an alcoholic, and now he's turned his life around. He don't go to bars or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And should I support him if he wants to find a partner? I mean, how do you deal with this day to day?
Yeah, Jane, I think you probably have learned a long time ago how to say to your son, I love you very much, but I think this decision is a bad one, and I can't help you to do this, right? And so,
I think... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and so he knows where you stand, and, you know, I think to treat him as you always have, to love him as you always have, isn't going to send a mixed message, you know, to when you support him as a person and in the good decisions that he's making. If he is going to look for a partner and ask you to support that, I think that's where you can say, listen, you know how much I love you. You know, I'll be respectful to this person that you want to have in your life, but if you're asking what I think, I have an obligation to tell you the truth, and the truth is I don't think that having this kind of relationship is God's plan for you or going to help you to find what you're looking for. So, you know, I love you as much as I ever have, and, you know, if this person cares for you, I respect him as a person, but I can't say that I think that being in that kind of a relationship is a good idea, so... I'm sorry that I can't tell you that I think it's great, but I still love you very much. So make a distinction.
Well, that we've already established a lot of that. Mm-hmm. He'll talk to me sometimes, but I'll go, too much information. Or, you know, he does live with us. So it's, you know. But the thing is, if he does, I cannot not have my son in my home.
Sure.
If he wants to come for dinner.
Yeah, of course.
Or if we do.
Oh, of course.
You know, you work at card stores, and the card stores say, for my son and your partner, or my daughter and your partner, or your significant, it's everywhere.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think the difference would be between respecting and caring about each of them and treating them as a couple. And so that's where you make the distinction.
I have a friend whose son is in a relationship with another guy, right? And they love their son, and who doesn't? You have to love your child, you know, regardless of, you know, their proclivity or, you know, their attraction or whatever. But, you know, the thought of them, you know, losing that relationship with their son by not accepting the other partner is a difficult thing, and they come over to the house. They do all sorts of stuff. Where does a parent draw the line? That's kind of an important question, because, you know, you have to love your children, speak truth to them, right? And this goes for parents who are cohabitating their kids. You know, many parents listening right now have got a son who's living with his daughter or his girlfriend, and they want to come over. You know, you don't let them share the same room. You don't let them, you know, live like they're a married couple, right? Father, what's a family member do in a relationship? Because you don't want to rupture the relationship, because if that bridge is broken, then communication's broken down too. And how are you going to love them back? So advice to any parent that is out there that might be challenged by similar situations to Jane.
Yeah, and I think, as I said, the key is to separate the person from the decision, right? So you are my son. You're always welcome in my house. This is your home too. And, you know, your partner is a person that you care a lot about and who cares a lot about you. And, you know, we welcome someone who cares about you as we would any friend or any person in your life. And, you know, that person will always receive respect when they're in our house. Now, where you stay, if you're going to stay overnight, where you stay is up to you. If what I can give you for free is you sleep in your room and your partner sleeps in the guest room. If that's not what you would prefer, well, you're grown up now and you make money, so you know the Holiday Inn is not far away, and the two of you can decide to stay there. But that's on you. Like, I'm not going to pay for it, because I don't think it's a good idea. Come over in the morning, stay all day, and go back there in the evening. No one's going to make you feel bad about that. But this is what I can do, keeping my conscience just as you do.
And just I'm going to expand on it, Father. And time is always my enemy. I'm going to get to a lot of these calls. What about the scandal it might bring to your other children? You know, when you let your son and daughter sleep, you know, be in that relationship, or the daughter and the daughter, or the, you know, the daughter and the girlfriend, or the son and the boyfriend. I mean, you know, they can come to the house for Thanksgiving, or what do you do?
It is a bigger question when there are young children around. And I think in that case, you have to find some middle ground as well and say, listen, I'm not trying to get in between you and your siblings. But they're too young to understand everything that you and I understand about what's going on. And so I'm going to ask you, when you come over, not to raise questions that they can't understand the answers to. So for now, I'm going to ask you to introduce this person as your friend. I'm going to ask you to refrain from overly affectionate things, or things that they would immediately connect with people who are in love. For their sake, not because I'm upset with you. You know, and they don't go to bed, you know, we can talk about what happens then. But for the sake of not, they're going to ask the questions, but they're not ready for the answers. So let's show some mutual respect on that.
We'll jump back to the phones. Marie is listening in San Diego. Marie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. You know, I know this is about same-sex attraction, but let me just say this. I was in a relationship with my boyfriend in my 20s, and I lived with him. And I invited my parents over for dinner, and my mom refused. She said, we cannot enter that household. And she gave me the reason why. And it was a powerful witness to me, powerful. I didn't break up right away, but eventually I did. I moved out and back in with my parents, and it was because my mom was brave enough to speak up and tell me that. So, I mean, it was hard at the time, but at the same time, man, did it speak volumes.
Hey, Marie, thank you. What a great call. What a tough lesson, right, too, Father? I mean, I think of so many parents say, I just can't do that. But speaking that type of truth can plant a seed of conversion in your child. I love it. Ursula, let me take a quick break. I'll tell you what. Let me come back so I don't shortchange Ursula and everyone else that's on hold. We'll get you on the air. The number here, if you want to get in, I only have a few more minutes with Father Philip Pachansky, is 888-914-9149. We're back with more conversation right after this.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, we'll pray coming up in just a few minutes. If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Father Philip Pachansky, and I want to put you in touch with a great group. We're going to talk about it, courage and encourage, helping both those who have same-sex attraction and their family. How do you deal with it? Their website is couragerc.org. I don't know what encourage is, but I'm sure if you go there, there'll be a link. But I want to jump into the phones. I know time goes so quickly here, and I do appreciate your patience. Father Ursula is joining us from Altamonte Spring, Florida. Hi, Ursula. Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. In my opinion, the Pope did not make it clear what kind of sin the act of sodomy is. According to the Bible, it's an abomination.
An abomination.
And
yeah.
Also St. Paul, yeah, and St. Paul also, and also according to church fathers, church teaching, and also according to St. Paul when he talked about this. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to make it clear that this is, according to church tradition and morality, a grave sin. Otherwise, you know, those who commit the sin says, oh, that's just as if being not nice to my neighbor to complain or all these venial things.
Right.
We have venial things, we have mortal sins.
All
and
right.
Then the other thing I want to make clear that the criminality, I don't believe that the countries who make it criminalized are thinking of people who are just attracted to the same sex. I don't think they know that. I think for health reasons, because we forget that homosexuality was one of the cause to get AIDS, and that's a sickness that affects the whole population and a lot of people.
Ursula, thank you. I'm just going to hold you on that point. Just because I only have a few minutes. I'm grateful for your perspective. Father, she brought up Leviticus. She talked about how this is a grave sin, an abomination, perhaps felt that the Holy Father wasn't that clear on it. Those are very strong words. I want to give you the opportunity to respond to Ursula.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And in the full transcript of the interview, which of course gets cut by our secular media, the Pope did what he always does, which is refer back to the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Yeah. And there in paragraph 2357, it's made very clear that this is a grave sin, that homosexual acts are grave sins, and that the Church has always taught that. Now, to take Ursula's other point, at least in one country that I'm familiar with, where that woman emailed me from, the bill simply says that it applies to anyone who holds out as a lesbian or a gay person, and without defining what that means. But it also specifies that a church minister or church organization that becomes aware that a person is identifying like that must report them to civil authorities.
Wow.
So at least in that case, it seems the way that the law is written, it's not someone who's caught committing a homosexual act, but it's someone who admits that they are experiencing these attractions. And the bill would make the church and people in the church mandatory reporters just based on their self-identification.
Gerard's listening in Chicago. Ursula, thanks for your call. Gerard, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Drew. Father Philip, thanks for the time. I wish I had a weekend with you guys. Question really quickly on your thoughts on, obviously, we're trying to pull our children away from same-sex attraction, but more importantly, trying to figure out where this is stemming from. Obviously, from the love in itself is one thing, but to further deepen the thought, was there some kind of trauma? Was there some kind of psychological trauma that followed this, or the reason why this is stemming from that. What are your thoughts of hypnosis to try to deepen, get into the subconscious that may be buried deep in his mind that he doesn't even know what he's going through? And as a parent, I tell you, I have a 15-year-old boy who's dealing with this. It's like a ticking time bomb because he's waiting for the day that he's 18 that he can just go out and do whatever he wants to do. Yeah, wow. And it's just like where desperation is in place, and we're surrounded in our communities, TV, everything, where something pops up with that. And we're quickly looking to change the channel. And it looks at it as hatred. You know what I mean? And obviously, we say all the right things that we know as Catholics, but it's very difficult, you know. And clearly,
as a dad, you see a situation that seems not right, and you want to fix it. But you know, the position the church takes is that there's not a one size fits all explanation for where same sex attractions originate, and I can back that up with now almost 14 years of working with people. There are as many stories as there are people who are experiencing them. I would caution about getting too much focused on therapy or hypnosis you mentioned. What you don't want to do is send a message to your son that your love is contingent on him fixing this, right, or you being able to fix this for him. I know that's not what you mean, but it's easy for someone to perceive that dad thinks there's something wrong with me that needs to be fixed. So give him a chance to talk about what's going on, really listen, and try and find some answers to questions together rather than approaching it from a problem that needs to be solved. It would be my advice.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That's exactly what the hardship is trying to figure out. I don't want to make it seem like, hey, you're broken and I need to fix you, you know, and then comes in the thoughts because it's actually raised.
And Gerard, as a father, too, I think you bring up a great question. You want to know, was my child somehow, without my knowledge, somehow victimized or abused? Because I worked with a guy years ago, and that's what happened. He had been heterosexual until his cousin started to molest him, and then he really went off to the other end. And that was a situation where sexual abuse really was the trigger. And I also knew a guy who grew up, ever since he was a child, always had this, you know, predisposition to wanting to be feminine, wear sister's dresses and things along those lines. So, you know, as the church points out, Father, in the catechism, it's very clear, it never defines the origins of the, you know, homosexuality. It's not sure. So we'll have to see. But, you know, I don't blame Gerard at all wanting to find out what the problem is. And how do you do that? How do you safeguard your child, too, if you think, well, maybe that is the case? Because you do want to get healing for the trauma.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the pieces of advice that I always go back to, I heard from Matt Frad, and he was talking about it in terms of how early children are exposed to pornography. And he said from a very early age, they make sure that their kids get the message. If ever anybody says anything, does anything, shows you anything that makes you feel weird or uncomfortable or confused, we want you to come. We will always be happy if you come and tell us about that. We will never be upset. We just want you to tell us, you know, if anything like that happens.
That's well said. Maggie, my producer here on the board, she's got an insight she wants to share, or at least a question. Maggie?
Father, sure. I have some family members that are gay and trans as well. And they sometimes use the argument that if you don't support that lifestyle, that you're contributing to an atmosphere that sends young people to suicide. And I don't know how to respond to that. I don't know how to I don't know how to respond to that argument.
Well, I think obviously be as compassionate as you can yourself, so that, you know, there's that kind of puts the lie to it, you know, to say, well, look, have I ever treated you that way? Have I ever made you feel that way? But, you know, I think statistically, yes, there is an epidemic of mental illness and suicidality, especially among young people. And it disproportionately affects people who identify as LGBT in its various forms. But when you dive into the statistics, they don't change very much at all when you go to countries that are very gay affirming. They don't change when you follow people 10 years past transgender surgery, for example. There's got to be more to it than just religious opposition or perceived stigma or things like that we really need to care for and pay attention to the whole person.
I only have a couple moments left, and I want to make sure that we I just am so impressed by what the work you're doing at Courage. Could you share a little bit about Courage and Encourage and how people can get connected?
For sure. Courage and Encourage are both groups under the umbrella of Courage International, and that's the website that you mentioned, couragerc.org. And if they go on there, they'll find under programs for individuals, those are our Courage groups, for families, that's our Encourage groups, and then lots of resources for people on any side of the issue, especially people who are in ministry. I would want to mention, because I'm hoping lots of priests listen to your program, we have a Courage group that is specifically for priests who are experiencing same-sex attractions and want support as they live out their celibate, chaste commitment with integrity and honesty. So that's a great joy for me to lead that group. And you know, if people don't have a group nearby and they'd like to talk about how to approach their bishop about starting one, they can certainly get in touch with us through the website or call our office.
It certainly will be a game changer for you and give you great resources. Courage for those with same-sex attraction, right, Father? And Courage for the family members
of
those with same-sex. And the website, couragerc.org. And if you are a priest, check it out, okay? Hey, Father, thank you so much for all that you do. It's been a very wonderful conversation. I'm grateful for it.
It's always a pleasure to be on your show. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Likewise. It's Father Philip Pachansky. Going to take a short break. We'll pray for him during the chapel. That's straight ahead. If you have a need, a desire, if you're struggling with something, you want a little extra prayer power, let's join the Divine Mercy Intercessors, all of us coming together, imploring the great mercy of God. I'll be right back with the chaplain.